He is one of the Shoftim that are not on the same level. The Shoftim, like anybody else, they have different levels. Gidon and Yiftach are two of the Shoftim that are not necessarily well learned. We see with Yiftach, we'll see that he didn't know basic halacha. He never went to one of the halacha classes, whether it was Rabbi Yoselovich or Rabbi Combs, but he didn't know some basic halacha, and he didn't know how to ask. And one of the things is important to ask. And again, when we say he didn't know, it means that he understood it differently but did not check. The time had a great deal of halachic understanding. So Gidon is one of these Shoftim. Another unique thing about this period is if you look right before him, you'll see that there are 7 years in which there was no Shofet, that there wasn't a major ruler. Gidon will have...
What? Sorry. Because nobody was in the level to be a judge, or because they didn't need it?
They needed it. They were ruled by the Midianim. But they didn't have somebody that was at a level to save them, and they did not cry out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. One of the things we'll see here is that the redemption came not because they did tshuva. There was a lot of avodah zara. Again, we'll see that with Gidon's father. And there wasn't somebody, the Mephoshim talk about that they looked, Kadosh Baruch Hu Ki'ilu looked for someone to save them, and he was looking for someone that had merit. In the end, he found Gidon, because Gidon had kibud av ha'em. Gidon honored his father at the risk to his life. And so therefore, Gidon had a certain amount of merit. But there wasn't somebody that had that merit. And the people did not realize what they were doing. They cried out because they were oppressed. We'll see in a little bit that they were oppressed, but they did not do tshuva. They didn't get the connection that they were doing something wrong. They knew they were suffering, and they were suffering greatly, but they don't necessarily make that connection. So there wasn't anybody to lead them, and there wasn't a reason for them to be saved. And therefore, there wasn't a shofet. Okay? Gidon is one of the last of the shoftim in which the miraculous fighting occurs. We'll see that the next set of major fighting is with Yiftach, which is about 100 years later. About 100 years later. And that is no longer on the same kind of miraculous level. So let us take a look at the Perek and see some of the information, some of the things that we can garnish from that. B'nai Yisrael has this Vayasu B'nai Yisrael Hara B'nai Hashem, and again, as we've talked about, it doesn't specify what they're doing wrong. There is oftentimes avodah zara. There is not necessarily how it starts, but they have a great deal of certainly outward belief in a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Mephoshim talk about that this particular parak, the story of when a Kodesh Baruch Hu came to Gidon, was on Pesach. But his father, who had these idols, also had a Seder, and had a Seder night with all kinds of chumras, probably shmura matzah that was hand-baked, but a lot of chumras and a lot of difficulties. So the Ra is not specified, and the Ra sometimes is not so great. But because we see that they were ruled by the Midianim, this was a period that there was more Avodah Zarah, and it was a period that they were weak. V'ta'az Yad Midian al Yisrael. What does V'ta'az mean? What?
They became bold.
They became stronger over them. Oz is chutzpah. Oz is bold. Oz is doing something that is beyond. And the Midianim were dominated them in a very cruel and way that didn't leave anything for them. We'll see that the Midianim, what they did was they took all of the food. They took everything. And if you don't leave anything, the people will die. And that is cruel. And there is a border in terms of how you, even if you're the good guys or the bad guys, there are rules that you have to follow in terms of what you do if you're in charge of somebody else. And that's true in halacha. If you have a ger or a toshav, which means somebody somebody who's converted, but somebody who lives amongst you, and keeping some of the mitzvahs of B'nai Noach, or all the mitzvahs of B'nai Noach, there are certain halachas you have to treat them fairly and nicely. But here the Midianim just were totally cruel. It says that B'nai Yisrael made for themselves hiding places. On your tiul on Sunday, did you see any hiding places? No. You saw places where people could hide. There is places on the trails that are remote and are difficult to get to. In other parts of that area, that nature preserve, there are caves. And as we said, many times the oppression is so great that the only place you can hide is in a cave or something that provides a temporary kind of sanctuary that is hard to find. You probably will go on a tour later on to the Bar Kokhba caves, which are caves that during the period, I guess it's about 100 and f- not 100, it's about 700, 800, what am I thinking? Say about 1,000 years afterwards, a little bit more than 1,000 years after this, we'll see, have some caves that were during the period of Bar Kokhba, where the people had to hide from the Romans. If the Romans caught them, they would kill them. So they hid in these caves, and living in a cave is very difficult. Now, when they, again, about the Al-Qaeda, when the Americans talk about Al-Qaeda rulers living in caves, they have a certain kind of implication. Most probably that's not true. The leaders of Al-Qaeda are probably in a nice hotel room in Dubai, or someplace like that. But when you're in a cave, and when you go on that tiul, you can see that that's not the kind of place that one wants to live. Other options that they had were in the forest. Now, Israel used to have a lot of forest. And if you look outside, you don't see too much. There's something called a green line. You've ever read a newspaper? Anybody read a newspaper? There is something called a green line. One of the reasons is there's a line in which Israel replanted. The land was barren. When Israel came back, when the Jews started coming back, not Israel, when the Jews started coming back in the turn of the 19th century, a little bit before, a little bit after, they started having an organization called the Jewish National Forest, Jewish National Fund, JNF, I'm sorry, Jewish National Fund, sorry. But they did have another one called Keren Kayemet Yisrael. They used to have little tzedakah boxes, and they used to plant trees. That money used to be planted trees. You can still plant trees. But that, then, they're able to plant. But in this time, there were a great number of trees. And so you could cut out a place in the forest that it was hard for an enemy to attack you, and you could live there. But again, this is not an ideal kind of lifestyle. It's not a lifestyle of any kind of strength. It says that they were very poor because the Midianim would come and take everything. From Pasuk Vav, the Chazal, the Gemara learns, Vayidal Yisrael Ma'od, and the Jewish people became poor, Mipnei HaMidyan, because of Midyan. They learned that if you don't have food in the house, that makes you poor. The definition of poverty is a difficult thing. If you look at all the things, somebody is poor because they have less than half of the average income or something like that. That may or may not make them poor depending upon the country. But if they don't have any food for breakfast, and any food for lunch, and any food for supper, it doesn't make any difference whether or not the country, if that's the top decimal or the lowest decimal, the lowest decta, we aren't going to get it. What? No, you can divide the population, the top 10%. Each 10% is a thing, and that's one of the ways people look at poverty. They look at poverty by what the lowest 10% have, or what the highest. But it doesn't make any difference. If you don't have any food, if you don't have any grain, you're considered poor. So the Gemara says that people should try to keep food, try to keep grain as a backup. You never know what's going to happen. And that's one of the cautions that the Gemara gives. But the pasuk continues, Vayizaku b'nei Yisrael el Hashem, and they called out to Hashem. They called out because of their suffering, not because they were doing tshuva. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers them. Vayishlach Hashem ish navi. Not a malach, but it's clear that this is an ish navi. And according to most of the Mefarshim, this is Pinchas. Who is Pinchas?
He killed people in the desert.
So how old is he about here? How old is he here?
80.
What?
Very old.
What does very old mean?
Like
very is like
older than me.
Top 10%. What is very old? Do we have an estimate of his age? 80, 90, 100, 128, 179?
That's really, really old.
How old is he? Well, again, look at the chart here. We're talking about the beginning of Gideon's period. And it says here that is 2,683, which is about, how long ago is that from now? Now is what year? This year is 5,771. So that's about 3,100 years ago. Okay? But if we go the other direction, we know Pinchas the story of Pinchas occurred in the desert. So that means that it was before they came into Israel, which was 2,488, which is about 200 years before this. So Pinchas at this point in time is
200 plus years. Was he born in the desert?
He was born. He was 200 and more than 240. He was probably born in Egypt. Pinchas, the story of Pinchas, he says that he wasn't a Kohen because of his father. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that, it says in the Chumash that Aaron and his sons became Kohanim. It didn't say Aaron and his sons and grandsons. Pinchas was a grandson. So Pinchas was not in that until after this story with the people where he kills some people that are not doing good things, and he gets, he's given the kahuna. So that means that he was born before they got the kahuna, which is like in the first year, a little bit, the beginning of the first year of when they come out after of Egypt. So that would be 240 years. And he most likely was born in Egypt. But we also have as a medrash, we'll see Pinchas, this isn't the end of him. Pinchas, we'll see with Yiftach, who is about 100 years later. And we see Pinchas with David HaMelech, which is about another 150 years. And some of the Midrashim say Pinchas becomes Eliyahu Anavi. He changes his name after the television commercial. He didn't get any royalties, so he changed his name. He became Eliyahu. And Eliyahu, according to the Midrash, never dies. Doesn't die, and he keeps reappearing. And the reason for that Midrash can be discussed, but Pinchas lives for a long time, even without that connection. But he sends this Navi to the people, which means to Shiloh, probably. Shiloh is where the Mishkan is. And he sends him there, and he says, what does he say? What does his Navi say? He says, you're doing bad. God saved you from Egypt. You had it worse than now in Egypt. And God saved you from there. And he saved you. Egypt, according to the Midrash, or the historical outlook, or looking at what was happening in Egypt. There's a Midrash that Egypt had a Kabbalah, understood that they would never have any slave escape from Egypt. Any group of slaves would never be freed. And if you look at that, that was the TV, that was the natural kind of situation. And so when we talk in the davening or Kiddush on Shabbos, we say, Zechu Yitzias Mitzrayim. It's not just a nice language or a nice prayer, but it has in it a reminder of who we are and how we got there and what HaKadosh Baruch Hu's relationship is to us. And it's not that we necessarily are deserving, but that there is that relationship that exists between us and God, because we have an essential belief in God, and that relationship exists. Unfortunately, in the Navi, the people didn't respond to what he was saying. They didn't do tshuva. But still the situation was so bad that we'll see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends a malach to Gidon, not a person, but an angel, to Gidon